Try and get everything going. Oh no, that fell. That's what you do. Hello and welcome to episode 49 of Great Things with Great Tech, the podcast highlighting companies doing great things with great technology. My name's Anthony Spiteri, and in this episode, we're talking to a company that aims to provide secure cloud solutions, focusing on data protection and security to both small and large enterprises across the world. They have a vision to keep striving for the best solutions in the IT market with core support from key targeted vendors. That company is AnyCloud. I'm talking to Grégoire Fremont-Moller, CEO and co-founder at AnyCloud. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Anthony.
Oh, it's good.
Pleasure coming.
Yeah, it's good to be talking to you. I don't speak to, traditionally, I don't speak to many European-based companies on the show. So it's good to be speaking out from Denmark, from Copenhagen. I believe you're in Copenhagen, right?
Yep.
Excellent. Yeah. And I'm actually, as you guys can see on the video, I'm not in my usual office because I'm actually recording this from a house that is not my own house because I'm homeless at the moment. So we've got a bit of a temporary setup. It's a bit of an experiment. So let's see how this goes, Grégoire. But before we get into talking about AnyCloud and all the good services that you guys are doing in the space, if you like great things with great tech and would like to feature in future episodes, you can click on the link on the show notes or go to gtwgt.com or go to your favorite podcast platform, hit the subscribe button, and also to YouTube, where you can also subscribe, catch up on all past episodes, and hit that subscribe button once again so you can keep track of what's coming. Right, Grégoire, let's talk about AnyCloud. Let's talk about the founding of AnyCloud, actually. And it's good to go back to my roots here, which is service provider land. It's good to go back all the way, 25 years now almost, or 24 years back to 1998. Yourself and your brother founded AnyCloud. You just want to go through a little bit about, you know, how you came to found the company.
Yeah. So basically, the story is have a completely different starting point than the one we are in reality today. So we, my brother and I, actually used to love Apple computers, and we, you know, we were very much in love with Apple as a company. It was very uncommon in Denmark to have Apple computers, there was back in the day, there were Windows and Apple companies. It was completely divided. And the Apple computer companies tend to be creative businesses. So we started there, and I think it's a very crucial point in our career, because that's what we implement in AnyCloud today still is about simplicity. So the simplicity is the core of our business and has always been the core of Apple. So I think that's the heritage we took out of that. So we started basically out of nothing, printed some leaflets on some Apple computers, put it into a music industry and advertising agencies and movie industries, and waited for the phone to call. You know, 1998, before we had a mobile, so we were on a landline for the call. And when the first customer called, it was like, you know, make sure to kill it with service. So we would come and install it for free for the first time and make sure to have the relationship with the customer. And from there, build the relationships and grow the business through organic word of mouth, basically. So that was the stepping stones and the DNA, which I have very deeply integrated into AnyCloud, is simplicity and relationships to the customers.
That's really interesting. This is a story, you know, in a different time, you know, working on a different operating system, completely offering services around Mac, which I guess back in the day was a little bit forward thinking as well from that point of view, right? And then it's very funny, I've got visions of you and your brother sort of sitting there in your home or wherever it might be waiting for this phone call. And, you know, it's so interesting talking about the genesis of these companies, you know, and how they started. And this is a very unique one. So, you know, 1998 comes around, you know, you've started the company. What's the evolution over, say, because obviously 1998, we're talking about 99, 2000.com. The internet's, you know, really kicking off, but it's had a bit of a setback. How did you, operate the company, and at what point did you kind of flip over? Because I know you did a lot of hosting back in the early days. So at what point did you flip over to that?
So that started in 2006. Companies wanted to have data out of their companies at that point. Everybody still had all their server environments, you know, in the basement or in some closet somewhere, you know, good or worse. And they basically wanted to have data out of the company. So we started in 2006, copying data to a data center located in Denmark. This is before we became an international player. So we were only located in Denmark.
So just and before then, that, I'm just interested. So 98 to 2006, was it just focusing on the Mac stuff before then, or did you branch out to other types of managed services? What was that time frame? That's a big gap.
Completely focused on the Apple computer, you know, networking, taking care of the entire business of the customer. So delivering all the hardware, it's a completely different style of company than we do today. So quite a transformation, and the evolution came with the customer demand. You know, the customer wanted to start having hosting services, and we saw that if we had another provider come in with those services, they will eventually, you know, take over the customers. Mm-hmm. So we had this period of 8 years, very successful in the Mac business, started out of nothing. Actually, a funny story is that in 1998, the Apple market share in Denmark was 2% of the market. So we went to the bank and tried to borrow some money, and the bank lady said to us, well, with 2% market share, it's quite uphill to have a successful business. So we left with almost nothing and ate a lot of oatmeal, you know, hard work.
I would have tried to sell it as there's a huge addressable market here. We've got like 98% of this addressable market to try and bite into. No pun intended, obviously, with Apple. But yeah, that's maybe how I would have got it. But yeah, but you moved on, right? So and did you, when you moved into hosting, obviously, how many people did you have at the company, you know, building through that, you know, Mac days up until that first time when you thought, well, we've got to do hosting? How did you transition your people as well? I'm always interested in that transition because I was in the hosting game since 2002, since I started working. So, you know, I kind of know that sort of hosting industry and what was going on at that time. So did you do it yourselves, or did you get people in? Like what was the sort of way that it worked back then?
So in the beginning, we kind of did it ourselves. We hired new people to build infrastructure. It, you know, in that time, it was also two different personalities of or job functions, you can say. So you were either customer relations or out with the customer, or building solutions in a data center. So that was the two things very, very much far from each other. So we hired people to build infrastructure and you know, took it from there. Eventually, over the years, we started virtualization, removed all the data from the customers' basements, virtualized it in a data center.
Yeah.
Delivered the backups, became ISO certified, and you know, have all the certifications made, which were quite a journey. Also, being a company, we tend to put ourselves in the top shelf of compliance. We focus a lot on compliance, so very, very big efforts going on in there. But you know, eventually we had all the customers running in a data center, and we stumbled upon Veeam by accident. Yeah. This is 2009, approximately.
Just before we get to the Veeam part, which is a very, very significant part of this interview, mind you, because obviously, you know, there's joint interests at play here. This is an agnostic podcast, but in this podcast, we are definitely going to talk about great things with Veeam technologies. But you're obviously your other partner of choice, like I alluded to, you've just decided to go with a couple of key partners and vendor partnerships, and the other one's IBM. And that, from the timeline that I've seen, that sort of kicked off in 2008. Was that from a data center perspective, or was that the hardware? How did the IBM partnership start?
Yeah. So that was the hardware, you know, infrastructure for data centers. And obviously, Apple wasn't really good at servers, you know. So that part we outsourced to IBM. bought all the equipment from IBM. And basically, there was also this tipping point of us moving away from being an Apple company to starting specializing in virtualization, and from there, IBM.
Interesting. So, okay. So I'm just imagining back then IBM with the storage, with the blade systems, the pizza boxes they would have had.
Exactly.
Maybe pizza boxes first, then the blade systems that they would have had. I went into a few data centers in my time and I definitely saw that very, very ugly, but very utilitarian IBM kit that was always very sort of mysterious, but you always knew it did the trick.
And stable.
And stable as well. Though I did go through a bit of pain in a few IBM situations, but I don't think that was their fault. But anyway, that just opens old wounds. But you know, with that, you decided to stick with IBM as that key hardware vendor, and I think that's going to obviously resonate, you know, as we go more into what you guys are doing today. But now let's talk about Veeam, because I think the Veeam cooperation that you had started a year later in 2009, which is very early Veeam as well, when we think about it. So how did that kick off?
So that was the desire from us to protect ourselves, you can say. We had all the customers running in a data center, and we were starting to think, how can we elevate the security, not only for the customer, but also for ourselves, about uptime and RPO and RTO, as you know all about. And very important factor for me, basically when I drive a hosting business where I have customers' data in my custody, was to be able to, you know, get up in the morning and look myself in the mirror and say, I've done everything I can to protect and have a high availability platform for the customers. That's been in the DNA. And we, you know, we investigate the market for the backup solutions. And at that point of time, and still, I believe, Veeam was definitely a front runner, and the simplicity of using the Veeam, again, back to the simplicity.
Yes.
I also always embed in the products we deliver, but also we use, even though I could say that IBM is a very complex machine, but we can navigate in that. But Veeam was a very simple, you know, interface to use, and very flexible, and it gave us all the features to do a backup of our environment. So we were basically our own first customer.
There you go. Yeah, and you're right. Like, and the simplicity sort of narrative does flow, especially in 2009. I think I first started using Veeam back in 2010. So you're about a year ahead of me. So that time frame would have been about version 3, version 4. So at that point, Veeam, from a backup perspective, was a very, very simple product. It did what it said in a box. It backed up virtual environments. And, you know, it's obviously evolved quite a bit since then. And you guys have definitely evolved with it from what I've seen. But yeah, it's an interesting one. And just at that time, you know, with you know, that 2008, 9, 10 mark for you guys, would you have considered yourself more a managed service? Or you're obviously offering infrastructure as a service, but was it always a customer calls up and says, hey, we want a couple of virtual machines, or we want a resource pool, and you would provision it? Or from this, did you have any automation back then from a control panel perspective? You know, what were you guys operating as?
So we were a managed service provider. We did automation, but that was for internal use, you know.
Okay, back end stuff.
Definitely a managed service provider. We were also at the stage where we had the customers directly to the company, so we wanted to service the customer, but basically, you know, servicing the customer, you know, making this customer do as little as possible. That was the success criteria for us. So that also meant if they wanted a new virtual machine, we would do it for them.
Yep.
So that was inside the service, which originates from the Apple business, and still does, you know. That's so
Apple. Yeah, we'll touch on that a little bit later. I've got a couple of questions around, you know, where you feel the industry is going and where yourselves are going from that. Because obviously, you know, back then there was a necessity to do high touch overall. And that's also, it was also because the technology, the automation wasn't quite there that you could, you know, easily put a control panel out and let the customer do it. But number one, trust as well. It was still fairly complex and still very new. So the fact that your managed services back then was obviously the way that you wanted to spin it up. But in 2011, you did do your first automated backup. So what exactly was that, and how did that work? Because I guess that's your first step from moving from a hands-on approach to some sort of level of automation.
Yeah. So in 2000, we were at the point where we knew this really well. And we said, why shouldn't we service other customers with this great backup solution where we could be the secondary side? So at that point of time, Cloud Connect wasn't introduced at that point of time. So we used VPNs, very, very troublesome solutions, not easy to deploy and time consuming, but we used VPN and did backups of the customer sites, other customer sites. So it was something that developed our mindset also into becoming the backup provider for others rather than for ourselves. So we didn't, at this point of time, we didn't only use it for ourselves, we also used it for others. So the first version of, you can say, backup as a service in a very manual way, but still we automated it in a way so the customer, again, didn't do anything themselves.
Yeah, and out of necessity, right? Because it's, again, the technology to a certain extent wasn't quite ready, at that point for you guys to use. But you went out and did some great things with some technologies out there with the VPN clients that were available there, and you put something together that worked, obviously. And during this time, you're obviously growing your customer base. Are you still localized within the Denmark itself, or have you branched out at this point yet?
Both, actually. So we still have some Danish customers in Denmark, but mostly we have data in IBM Cloud. All data in our 365 offering, for instance, is running in IBM Cloud, even the compute and everything.
That's today, so, right? That's what you guys are doing today.
That's 2022.
In 2022, But back then, so we're talking still 2012 sort of mark, it was more just, Danish customers servicing there. And then had you broadened out and sort of gone beyond the borders of Denmark with your services back then, or was it still servicing the local?
So that happened in 2013.
Okay.
We started a company in Poland. We actually have companies in Poland, Finland, Czech Republic, and France.
Yep.
Today. So we started in 2013 in Poland, and at that time, the Polish market was not overwhelmed with international suppliers. So we could fit in as a service provider for data protection and especially at the time, virtualization on the Polish market, giving all the compliance and the certifications to compete with the Polish actors on the market. So that actually was in. And that was also a great learning process, because from there on, we became not a Danish supplier, but we had to fit everything in to be a cross-border product.
Yeah.
TNCs, commercial aspects, translations, contracts, everything, pricing models. So that was actually a tipping point for the international
career. And that foreshadows where you guys are today, which we'll get to later. I guess in the big thing, we talked about it before, the technology wasn't quite there in, say, 2011, but certainly in 2013-14, Veeam released or started to release Cloud Connect, which, became that transport mechanism. So, just talk a little bit about this. This show is about great things with great technology. So Cloud Connect is certainly a great technology that enables backup as a service. So what was your perspective of Cloud Connect and how that really enabled you guys to take that next step and maybe look to focus a little bit more on data protection?
So Cloud Connect was definitely the booster for our growth at that time. So we were in the beta program together with Veeam. So we had the Cloud Connect technology before it was launched. So we did a fully automated web portal where you could get 5 terabytes of storage for free immediately. And we still actually have that. If you go to our webpage on Leeward.global, you can sign up and get 5 terabytes immediately, which, in the beginning, people had to find out what is Cloud Connect, how can you use it? And we were very early on to push that you could, if you want to investigate and explore the Cloud Connect, you could do it for free by using our free trial for 30 days.
So and that's five terabytes is a big number. back then. Yeah. Right? That's a big, significant amount of data that you were giving for free.
Yeah, but that was, you know, a strategy for having also a high closing rate on the, you know, getting the deal. So if we shared out 5 terabytes for many people, we would also expect a lot of them to close the deal. So it was definitely an accelerator, and we got rid of all the VPN hassle. So now we could just deliver it from a web interface. So we still, this day today, I think we are one of few in the world that has a web interface in public where you can get the solution immediately deployed.
And that's an important case. And I want to talk about that a little bit later on, that's for sure. But I know that you guys went and focused on data protection and security. So during this point in time, so 2014, 15, you started to brand your business protection suite as Revert. So you've given them some names. You've got three today, but I think it all started with the data protection. But at this point, were you still doing infrastructure as a service? Or did you make the decision at some point to go, that's good, we did well here, but now we have to pivot to data as a service or data protection and security? That transition is very interesting to talk to. So maybe talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So we did still do infrastructure as a service at that point of time, but I'm also the kind of guy who believes in not having 100 products on the shelf. So it needs to be very slim so we can do everything 110%. If we can't go wholehearted into it, we shouldn't do it. So that's also why you won't find, basically that's also why you will only find two vendors in our company, IBM and me. You know, you can, some would say, okay, you're hanging your hat on very few vendors, but it's also at the same time the success, because we can specialize in that vendorship and make products that are specialized in a certain field extremely well. So Cloud Connect was definitely the one where we put all effort into Cloud Connect, making sure that we should, because with Cloud Connect, it also enabled us to go on any market, not only the market where we had a company. You know, we could travel across the world, and today we have customers in Brazil and Mexico, United States, all around the Europe, actually 29 countries.
So because the network connectivity part of that, the problem that you had with the virtual private network piece of it, that was solved by that technology, which gave you the flexibility to effectively deliver this across the world. So that's quite interesting there.
You had also the Cloud Connect as a step to IBM Cloud, because now we also, if we were to deliver a service in Brazil, we had to be locally, we had to be local. At that point of time, I was like, okay, so how are we going to do a backup as a service to a Brazilian customer with a latency below 100? And that was, that's where we really developed the relationship even further, not by just having infrastructure as a service from IBM, but also consuming their cloud services. So at that point of time, the transition kind of started to deploy solutions in IBM Cloud. Yeah. Data centers, which were called SoftLayer.
SoftLayer, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I guess skipping ahead a little bit, but I mean today, so do you offer the infrastructure as a service today, or do you sort of lead, or have you transitioned your customers into leveraging IBM cloud infrastructure and SoftLayer and the vCloud Director service they have, or the Cloud Director service they have? So you guys effectively don't do any infrastructure as a service today?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is the point where at some point you just said, look, we've done well with that business. We've transitioned where 1998 AnyCloud was the Mac, to 2006 where we did infrastructure, managed services, to 2011-12 which was, backup, started to manage backup. We're now going to focus on backup and security. We're going to let our customers still do infrastructure, but we're going to guide them to a different, we don't want to be doing it ourselves. What makes you as a company, you mentioned focus, but is there any other factors that drives a company to do such a shift? Because obviously a lot of other providers today, they want to do everything. And you said you want to focus. So, it mustn't have been the easiest decision to do that, because on some levels, you see the revenue and you see the potential in that infrastructure. But at what point do you go, no, we're just going to go down this data management and security path?
That's a long transition. So I can't pick a date. I would say it's been over a long period of time. Yeah. And you can, the same goes for the transition of, you know, direct to customer, to partners, to distributor.
Yes.
That was also a journey, a step journey that we're still walking, actually. So it's, I can't pick a time, but it's...
it's an attrition thing. It's an attrition thing. So as a customer might come in and out of contract, you know, you go, well, look, your contract's over now. You know, now we're going to transition you to the IBM cloud. We're still going to offer you data protection, but that side of things, you know, we're going to handle that through IBM. That's kind of how it goes. Yeah, that's interesting. I think I want to say the word is ballsy. I don't even know how to, you know what I mean? Like it's just, there's a lot of belief and strength and conviction about what you guys want to be doing moving forward to be able to cut off what a lot of people see to be a very good revenue stream in terms of a service. Because it, as you said, if you give away a bit of your customer base, it's almost like the opposite of what you said before. When you became an infrastructure company, you became an infrastructure company because if you weren't going to do it, then someone else would do it. But now you've got, you've almost got the confidence now to be able to say, okay, we're comfortable handing that off. Let's focus on Veeam as a data protection. Let's offer that and specialize in that. I think that's how I read it anyway.
Yeah.
Excellent. So talk a little bit about Revert and, you know, the different products, I guess the sub products and services that live under Revert, which you probably, I'm thinking backup as a service, DR as a service, probably Office 365 backup as a service. Are those the main services that you have under that Revert product?
Yeah, and also the fourth one, which is object-based storage.
Object storage.
So long-term retention.
Yeah. Ah, there you go.
And so yeah, that's basically the four services under the Revert product line. And again, it's simple. It's just four products, and we deliver it in a simple way. Also on the invoice, I know, you know, we don't have a lot of variables. It's a fixed fee for the amount of data and the amount of VMs. That's it. So where I mentioned it before in this call, but simplicity is in the cornerstone of everything we do, even on the invoice. So that's something I'm quite hysterical about.
Yeah, and you've mentioned it a number of times. So it's obviously very core to everything that you guys do, which is so important in IT. You know, and a lot of companies, and even in fact, the company that I used to work for before Veeam, one of our core tenancies was simplifying a complex world, I think it was. So, you know, it's kind of so important IT to be able to take what people perceive to be difficult and actually make it, you know, simple and make it in layman's terms, especially when it comes to data protection and that sort of stuff. And then you've got Retrust. So just maybe explain what Retrust is.
Yeah, so that's also a very specialized niche product. But Retrust is basically an IBM system, which is made for financial markets, banks. And, you know, it has more than 500 banks in the world protected in the platform. I stumbled upon that by coincidence through an IBM employee I know very well. And we were looking at this and looking at this great technology protecting money. You know, there's a lot of investment going in on how to keep fraudsters out of the applications and making sure that when Anthony goes to the bank, we are quite sure that this is Anthony's computer and Wi-Fi, MAC address, network ID, geolocation, everything. And I was looking at this, and I said, but you know, why only the banks? Isn't it something that everybody should use it? They have a public available application there where you either have a brand to steal, to protect, or a digital asset to steal. So that was actually the angle of it. And I've discussed this with IBM, and we became the first, and I think still actually the only, didn't check up on that recently, but I think we are still the only service provider selling this as a service. When IBM sells the system, you know, it will be a very big corporate bank, Bank of America, for instance. So it's something where we try to take something top shelf to the big corporation and put it a little lower and protect. For instance, we have an insurance company protected in the system where we detect bots and other illegal activity. And after the implementation of this, you know, it took 24 hours for us to give proof of some fraud going on that platform, which led to a police case. So, so it's something that is specializing in digital trust, basically.
So
you
is, know, it, is it?
Are you who you say you are?
Yeah, is it a, I'm just trying to think about type of service that it is, if it's as a service. Is it like, is it something that sits in front of someone's platform and it basically interrogates what's coming in and out and is detecting, you know, malicious behavior and malicious intent? Is that effectively
exactly
what it
that.
Is? Yeah, awesome.
Exactly
and,
that.
And you guys are basically taking the IBM product and you've hosted, offering it as a service effectively.
But actually, we don't host it. It's still an IBM offering.
Still an IBM
so host. We deliver the largest fraud intelligence database in chunks to smaller customers will reach themselves.
Interesting. That's good. That's a really good way of doing it as well. And you've opened yourself up. And this is and it's becoming, I think, more and more prevalent today. Obviously, ransomware is becoming, and even just cyber fraud security, it's a big thing. A lot of deceit out there. So it's a good service to jump on. And it sounds actually fairly unique in the market as well. So that's good for you guys to do. Is there anything else that you guys are focusing on apart from the data protection and the security? Is there a third tier or is that pretty much it?
Yeah, so we do still have the core business from back in the day. We have a department of that running the support for some customers, but it's in a, you know, we diverted the company in segments. So we do still have that, but it's other than that, we focus specifically on the security product and on the Revert 4 products, and that's it. If we were to onboard another, you know, another product, and in the future it'll only be one or max two.
So it will, because that goes against your simplicity in terms of what you want to be doing.
Exactly.
Let's talk a little bit about the as a service, the delivering as a service, because you've evolved over time from the managed services to the as a service. So where do you see that today in terms of, you know, what service providers want to be doing versus say the public hyperscalers? And then as well, what do you feel your customers, the tenants, want in terms of, do they want more handholding, or do they want to take more control and consume these services in a more automated fashion?
Yeah, so I'm into the more, they want to take more control. But the reason I just hesitate is because it has to be without the complexity. The customers wants to consume a product if it's easy, but if it's way too complex to use, they will tend to use the partner. That's how I see it. So the task here is to enable the end customer to figure out how to use it. And that's basically, you know, we have a 365 backup offering based on Veeam. The end customers don't wanna maintain a Windows installation with an application that needs patching and updating, licensing, blah, blah, blah. They just want to have a simple to use web interface where they can restore some data if they need it. That's it.
Yeah.
So that's actually what we built with the 365 backup. And we also did that for the partner. So the partner can be a managed service provider or they can invite the customer to onboard themselves.
Is that the fast track?
The fast track. Yeah, the fast track is actually on top of that. Ah. If you just want to have an entire backup of your entire suite, you enable the fast track. The partner enables the fast track either for themselves or for the customer. Customer chooses the data location, what to back up, enter the device code ID, and then they're done. We have automated all the creation of the backup jobs and when it runs and everything in the background.
Yeah. And in a way, what you're doing there is you're enabling the end user to become to take control of their own destiny, to control their backups and the restoration, give them some control. Because I believe today that tenants want, like you said, they want a little bit of control, but they want to understand what they're doing. They want to make sure that they're backing up. And I guess, like you said, you need the supporting technology to make that a success, because if it is too complex, if there isn't the right help or the right support, then the first time they come to recover, they might have an issue, or they might be backing up the wrong thing.
And that's exactly key, because you see in the 365 backup, you know, a company might not do a restore even every year. So when a system administrator comes, let's say he has been having the solution for a year and he needs to recover something, it needs to be so intuitive that he can do it without remembering how he was introduced to it 1 year before. You know, and that's the methodology we work out of in cloud. How can we introduce it to him the first time and make sure that he can not remember it in 2 years' time, but use it anyways, if he can't even remember how to do it.
Exactly. And what about, I guess, I think the most complex part of any, well, when I look at the pillars of say Revert and what you've got, the DR as a service is the most complex without question, because that involves, you know, replication of virtual machines, it involves networking, it involves process as well. So how does that methodology, you know, in terms of handing the end customer or the tenant more control work when talking about DR as a service?
Yeah, and you're right about that, because when talking about DR as a service, the system administrator will have to have a big knowledge of DR in the lean backup and replication part of the application. So we can't automate, you know, just next finish on that. That's simply impossible at this point. So we have a lot of video materials. We also we have templates, DR planning. We also have a failover planning. So the customer or the system administrator has a management report on who does what, when, how, and why. So to make sure that they remember to check everything down the road so it will function if they need it. So that's how, you know, we can come that far with the, you know, with the service and not the last step, which where the customer would just lean back and magic would happen. That's not possible in the DR.
That's right. But again, you're offering all the collateral and all the education to be able to give them the ability to leverage the infrastructure, well, not the infrastructure, the interface that you've done, building the automation, the procurement on top of the Veeam technology to make their jobs and their lives a little bit easier when it comes to configuration and then recovery as well. So that's brilliant. Let's finish off on distribute. You've kind of talked about this a little bit, but the move from, you know, working yourselves as managed service providers, we've talked about the journey you guys came on, hands-on managed service providers, you've mentioned partners, and now you're moving into this distribution world. Talk about that, because I think I'm hearing this a lot more from very successful service providers who are doing good things, great things with great tech, are leveraging disties more these days. So why is that important, number one? And number two, how is that different to working through to traditional, you know, resale partners?
Yeah. So we have some partners that used to be service providers with a VPO installation, and they experienced, you know, same as again, back to the, if the end customer wants to have control, they experience tickets coming in, I need to restore this, please do this and this and this. And the cloud service provider would be the ones going into the VPO and doing all the restore. So by us having develop the web interface and the restore portal for the entire chain and the multi-tenancy for the partner also, so it's where you can have an overview. We actually saw a shift of cloud service providers having their own VPO transformed into our solution, which also is a VPO, but we kind of put a web interface in front of it. So it was extremely easy to manage, and they could provide the end customer with the access to restore themselves, saving time for the service provider. And from there, it kind of took off, and we saw, you know, we built a business case where we say, okay, so if we can help some service providers, which at that time were on our level, why shouldn't we try and help a lot of business providers, service providers in throughout? And that's, this is where the distribution came in. So to make it easy also to consume our service, we should be available in the distributor portals where they are already consuming VMware and Veeam and, you know, other licenses. So again, to the simplicity of delivering the product, and we, so we do that in a, through a distributor today through 20 countries in EMEA, starting in Australia, by the way, in 2 months.
Oh, very good.
So, coming to you, Anthony.
And that effectively becomes like, I know that obviously the, I know that the companies I've worked for have tried to get to that point. I kind of, and I've heard of maybe two or three companies in the last couple of weeks, actually, who are going down this path. It seems to me that five, six years ago, it kind of wasn't possible for various reasons to actually execute on this. Even though I know that even talking 5, 10 years ago, the distributors like, you know, the Ingrams and the big guys worldwide, they wanted this. They wanted a checkbox option. So when they go to their customers, they, it's on the SKU and they just check a button and go, yep, we're good now. We can use, you know, any cloud or whatever cloud it might be. But I think the reality of the last 5 years of acceleration of the automation and all the technology that goes behind that has made this possible. Is that what's happening now versus maybe 5 years ago when it couldn't happen?
Yeah, definitely. It is about the scalability and automation of what you can do. So scalability is key. That's why we use IBM Cloud. We can scale infinite, and the technology used has to be, well, great. That's why I'm on this podcast.
There we go.
So, Veeam, I think Veeam is a very strong partner in that. And we've even automated, you know, the VBO can only handle so much. So we have automated the deployment of multi-VBOs in multi-regions throughout the world with IBM Cloud. And that is the software as a service offering, I think, can deliver to a mass scale, mass market, and also have making sure that the end customer can maintain the solution themselves and figure it out. You know, many companies just want to be as a service company, you know, serviced as a service, but they want to maintain it themselves if it's easy enough. So it's again about the simplicity.
Yeah, you've wrapped it up beautifully there as well. I think you guys have done some great things with great technology, and it shows, right, the way that you've been able to spread your services, grow them, develop them, narrowly focus them to certain areas of the market, but continue to grow. Just very quickly, what was the future hold for you guys? What are you looking to do over the next, I don't know, two to three years, because everyone says 5 years, but I'll keep it a little bit easier. You know, have you guys got plans to continue to grow, to add? I mean, you said you don't want to add more services, but where's AnyCloud going over the next couple of years?
So we are, you know, 2 to 3 years, our roadmap is to, you know, develop and mature our offering and making sure that we grow in other markets than EMEA. Right now we are present mainly in EMEA. So we want to grow throughout the world with this offering, and we are trying to do a journey of that. So 2 to 3 years will be specializing in the markets and making sure to mature our product, keeping ahead of our competitors, basically.
Excellent. Sounds good. Sounds like a great plan. I'm looking forward to seeing where you guys are going. Let's start to wrap up now. So again, Ruwa, thank you for coming on the show. I just want to remind everyone out there, if you like great things with great tech, please head to gtwgt.com. Please subscribe, favorite podcast channel. You can go to anchor.fm, get it distributed from there, go to anything. This will be on Spotify, Google, Apple, all the great podcasting platforms, on the YouTube as well. I'm going to put obviously all the links to any.cloud. That's actually obviously the name that you guys have got there. Funnily enough, we talked about that earlier, didn't we, Gregor, where there's a couple of any clouds, and sometimes you get your emails and your LinkedIn posts mixed up. I'll make sure I don't do that when I post the link to this episode. But with that, thank you very much, Gregor, and thank you to AnyCloud for appearing on episode 49 of Great Things with Great Tech. Thank you.
Thank you, Anthony. Thank you for having me.
No worries. All right, let me stop the recording.